From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection this hour was made yesterday when the YMCA of Greater Rochester made a major announcement. Leaders shared with the community that the Carlson Metro Center branch, which has been temporarily closed since November 24th, will close permanently. According to the YMCA of Greater Rochester, in the year prior to the COVID-19 pandemic, only 19% of Carlson members actively used the branch once a week or more. Data shows the branch averaged fewer than 500 visits a day. In a press release, YMCA leaders stated, quote, "As an organization, we cannot continue to dedicate financial resources to sustain a building that has nearly 65,000 square feet allocated to health and wellness with so few people using it on a daily basis," end quote. The news has generated some heated conversations within the community. Critics of the decision say that the YMCA has prioritized suburban membership over members in the city. It's an issue with many layers, and our guest today will address them along with your questions, and I'd like to welcome them now. George Rommel is the president and CEO of the YMCA of Greater Rochester. George, welcome back to the program.
Thank you, Evan.
Pam Cowan is Chief Marketing and Experience Officer of the YMCA of Greater Rochester. Pam, thanks for being with us.
Absolutely. Good to be here.
And a former member, a longtime member, Chris Widmeyer, was a member for about 25 years and recently dropped that membership and is with us now. Hi, Chris. Thanks for being with us.
Hi, Evan. Thank you for having me.
George, we read the release, but just if you could, in detail, let listeners know what led to this decision that was announced yesterday.
Sure. And thank you for having us. We embarked on about a four-month process in looking as we looked at COVID being much more longer than we expected. We looked at every operation, every piece of property, every aspect of what our portfolio included, and we started looking at deep dives in underutilized facilities, both suburban, urban, rural, whether they had buildings or not. Clearly, when you look at the Carlson situation over an extended period of time, not COVID-related, the slide in Carlson membership has gone on for an extended period of time. And I know many people have asked me, well, why didn't you take action sooner? Well, the reality was is that the balance that our association has is really about how the success in the suburbs can support the urban mission. However, what is not clear is the fact that what that money should be spent on. Our board decided it back in over a decade ago to change the focus to have the Maplewood branch be the primary recipient of subsidy dollars from the suburbs. And so why this thing accelerated is because our ability of the suburban branches to produce any dollars for the association is gone. COVID has done that. We don't see a recovery period like snapping our fingers. We still remain at 33%. Every branch we operate is in the red. And so when we look at what those subsidy dollars would do to help support our commitment to the urban mission, which is far greater than one building, this was the decision that the board arrived at after looking at every piece of information that we could.
George, do you think if you would have built something that looks like Penfield or something that looks like Pittsford in the city, the numbers would have been different in the city?
Well, let's remember that the Carlson building was built in 1982. It was, at the time, one of the 10 grandest YMCAs in the country. So let's not apologize for the size and aspects of what Carlson had. One of the key drivers of membership in the suburbs has been seniors and family. That has not been true in the city. the city has, particularly Carlson, and I do have to go back in history a little bit. This Y was created on a vision created in the 70s that Rochester was going to be a Silicon Valley of the East. It was going to be connected by a skywalk system a la Minneapolis. It was to produce significant dollars for the association to continue its youth service and programming at its satellite branches, Arnett, Monroe, Southwest. That never turned out to be true. As time went on, and an important change occurred in the mid-90s, when, and truthfully, Evan, I've been around long enough to understand all of this, the United Way stopped deficit funding organizations and started funding program outcome programming, particularly for youth and teens. There is no one or any entity that is underwriting adult wellness services at any of our operations. It is a choice of our board to put those resources towards support. And that included Maplewood as the number one, Metro Center, Monroe, Southwest, and Lewis Street. And so as we look at the impact of COVID and the fact that pre-COVID, 4 years in a row, we had million-dollar losses in Carlson membership, that had to be addressed.
I understand the point you're making, but I don't think you answered the question. I mean, I think the criticism I've heard in 24 hours is, look what the Y in the last decade plus has done. All of the glitziest investment is in Penfield and Pittsford, and if you would have shown the same attention to the city, you'd have a different result. Do you disagree with
that? Okay, let me try to answer it a different way. In 2004, we built a Y in Gates. No one seemed to have any issue with that. That has been a producer for it. In 2006, we built that Y in Penfield. So the next set of capital investments at the beginning of our comprehensive campaign was Maplewood. And that, over the past 11 years, is a $15 million investment. So what Maplewood has for its facilities, its equipment, its resources, the way we turned a 100-year-old building into a modern, fully handicap accessible building, we don't apologize for it. We think it's a great asset for the city. Now, Carlson had all of the modern amenities, and to build a Carlson branch in today's market in the city would probably be a $65 million investment. The way to build a YMCA in any community, in any city, in any place, is to do the demographics and look at the numbers. And if you can't make the proposition that you need roughly 10,000 people to support brick and mortar, then you have to find a funding stream to support it if you have another plan, which we did with Maplewood. That was never contemplated or needed at Carlson, but we ended up doing it anyway. But when I see that the city's most vulnerable children in child care and in teen services are doing that. So what I want to make sure this key point here is that without the suburban branches, there would have been no branches left. I think that's what has to be understood. There are over 100 cities in America that have urban operations that have municipal partnerships. We don't have that. We don't have a source of endowment that is specifically designated towards city operations. So we essentially created it ourselves. And as of March 16th, 2020, that's gone.
Okay.
So if you look.
If I could on that point, I mean, on the subject of money, I certainly take the point, George, that and I'm going to bring in – I want to hear from Pam and Chris, and I know there's a lot of people want to weigh in. I have no doubt that every facility is expensive to rehab or to create new. I take that point. But I also, you know, am hearing from people who have helped raise money for you. And I want to read the note that I got from a local pediatrician named Dr. David Topa. He sends me a note that says, "Evan, over the past decade, I helped raise tens of thousands of dollars for the YMCA. I left the board of the Monroe Y because I was tired of seeing that branch be assigned higher annual campaign goals than its size justified, especially in comparison to other branches, yet not having adequate staff to meet those goals. In addition to that, the branch leadership's salary was based on the size of the branch, not the needs of its members, so it was common for highly skilled staff to get plucked up by the larger suburban branches. The Monroe Y was a training ground for the suburban branches. And finally, in retrospect, it is apparent that the Y has engaged in a starve the beast approach, underfund a branch and then close it because members choose to go to other better funded branches." That is from a pediatrician who has raised money for you, who has essentially said, look, number one, you've been starving the beast in the city, and that's why people aren't going there. And number two, if you are raising money to build Pittsford, and part of the promise that you've told donors is, help us build this in Pittsford, and then we can keep what we have in the city, you haven't done that. That's what Dr. Topa says.
Let me try to clarify that. I'm going to respectfully disagree on a few points. Number one, the monies that branches are expected to raise and are asked to raise are to provide financial assistance to those in need for those unable to pay the regular fees. Has nothing to do with supporting brick and mortar, has nothing to do with supporting overhead, whatever, staffing, et cetera. In essence, the YMCA of Greater Rochester, with its resources, was underwriting Monroe at a $500,000 level. We were facing one other clear reality at, Evan, can you hear me?
I can hear you just fine. Yep.
Okay. Oh, good. There's looks like the sound just changed. The other reality is that when the decision was made to make the city investment in Maplewood versus Monroe, it was based on two premises. We had an opportunity to go to Irondequoit to build a Y in Irondequoit. We chose to stay at Maplewood. And the reality of Monroe was that it was a 97-year-old building in significantly worse shape than Maplewood. It was built very differently than Maplewood, and it was on a postage stamp of land with no parking. It was not accessible. What do I tell people in wheelchairs bringing kids in strollers about the ability for us to do that? So certainly a choice had to be made, and the decision was made. But we did not starve Monroe. We continued to support it. I would also say that one of our best executives in Monroe went on to be a CEO of a city YMCA in another part of the state. Another one of our executives went to run Carlson Metro Center. So, yeah, I'm sure there's always people that move from our branches from one place to the other, but there was no targeted approach to do that. And when faced with what COVID had done with our ability to produce any support, it was clear that this was not a real estate decision, by the way. It was an idea to have another organization serve the community in a better way where we were struggling to do so. So we gave that building away. And I think the community was in support of it. I think the other part of it is that, we did not force members to go anywhere. We have a facility in the southwest part of Rochester, a 10,000 square foot unit that has a very, very, very loyal following. It is a free society where members get to go where they want. We don't force them to go to any particular place. And there was no undue pressure put on Monroe to raise more money than any other branch. In fact, the assistance that Monroe gave compared to what they raised, we gave far more assistance than what was raised. So, yes, there was great effort by many, many branches to raise money. That's a key part of what we do to provide that financial assistance. Oh. But I don't think this is germane to the Carlson situation at all.
Okay, fair enough, though. But if you told donors, for example, when you're trying to build Pittsford, help us do this and we can keep city locations open, yeah, is that breaking a promise?
That's not what we said. And I'll absolutely read it to you. The reality is that sustaining urban operations by tripling the size. Don't forget that the Shotland branch was a replacement of the most productive branch in the association, the Southeast Branch, that had been built in 72. That gives us greater capability to provide operational support to our urban centers. Now, that branch was open a grand total of 4 months, right, before we got shut down. So it was built into the pro forma that an additional $1 million a year was coming to the association to do that. Where is that money now? Since March, that money has disappeared. If you could tell me when that money is going to return and I can get to 75%, 100% capacity, I will have a new source of money to create new dreams, which is what this task force is about. And that's the key thing here. The relationship between the suburbs, we don't apologize at all that the suburban operations are expected to fund that. But when you're losing $1 million serving 500 people a day in a 65,000 square foot facility, you have to ask yourself the question of whether that money could be used for better purposes, i.e. to serve more people in need, rather than a membership that primarily was a commuting membership. The statistics show there was not a heavy city membership at Carlson. We have the heat maps. We have the zip codes. We know that. And that all goes back to this vision that so many people were going to come to downtown to work and use the Y. My office has been in that Y since the early 90s. At noon in the 90s, the place had 1,000 people in it. At noon prior to our shutdown, there were maybe 50 people in it. And it is a numbers game. And when you build these facilities, you have to have volume. And the volume, the suburbs didn't kill that. It certainly took some business away. But many of the people that were Carlson members using our other branches kept their money at Carlson. All right. So it's still in that way they chose to support what was happening. So, you know, I get it. I am not trying to minimize in any way the pain that our long-term members are feeling. I've reached out to many of them to have discussions about it. This is a loss to that constituency, but it is not an abandonment of the city in any way. The whole goal of this process is to throw the net wide open and say, what can we be differently? And what if there is truly a desire to create another facility in the Rochester city limits, it has to be approached and created in a completely different way than it was envisioned in the 80s.
All right, last question for you, and then I'm going to turn to our other guests here. And sure. I just want to reference some of what we heard last hour from a man I think you know well. He says he knows and respects you very deeply, and that's former Rochester Mayor Bill Johnson. And
absolutely.
Bill said he respects the challenge that you have, but he said he thinks there are sometimes decisions made that are not intended to be hurtful. They are not intended to be part of a history of abandonment of cities, and yet they follow the same playbook. And what ends up happening is the resources go to the suburbs, the city gets left behind, black and brown communities get left behind, and he doesn't think that that's what you want to do intentionally, but he says ultimately it must be said that that is what is happening here, that this is an abandonment, and that eventually the YMCA has to decide what is our mission, and our mission must be to be there no matter what in the city of Rochester, and if we are only in the suburbs, then we are not fulfilling the mission that we claim to fulfill. That's what Bill told us last hour.
Sure.
What would you say to him?
I understand Bill's position, but then why are we making significant commitments in communities that match the demographic that the former mayor just said? Why are we still in the Southwest community? Why are we in the Maplewood community? Why are we in the Market View Heights community? Why do we have a community services division that runs exclusively out of those neighborhoods to support people in need? You cannot say that about the downtown YMCA. The demographics clearly do not support that. And the financial assistance participants that use the Carlson Y clearly did not support it or use it in a way that we see at the other three locations. So that this is a location challenge. This is the fact that the Beacon is this big monster downtown Y that was built on a vision of serving everybody and producing enough dollars to support the neighborhood activity. We want to get closer to those neighborhoods. We want to be able to bring services that are more efficient and more impactful, and without having to run an 18-hour-a-day, 363-day-a-year operation. We believe that's possible. And that might include Carlson or not, but we can't answer that now in the time frame we're in. You need to hold us accountable as an organization that our commitment to urban services is substantial, because why wouldn't we just shut the doors on all the kids programs? And I think that's, you know, when you spoke earlier, you said the closing of the Metro Center. No, this is the cessation of the adult membership offering, where people pay a fee to participate. It is not the end of services. And if we can find a way to make it work, we're going to need partners. We're going to need help. I want that door flung wide open so that we can look at other locations. Is there another location in the city that would be able, with a complex mix of funding and support and partnership, that might do that? Remember, we have looked in the last 15 years. We had an effort to look at a Y on Elmwood Avenue in the city limits. We had a Y at the College Town operation. This has not been put aside for the last 15 years. But what is clearly a reality is that when you look at 10 or even 20 years of experience at the Carlson Metro Center branch, it has diminished in people over and over and over. And the association in 2011 subsidized Carlson $211,000 gladly.
Okay.
Membership, $211,000. In 2019, before COVID, $750,000. So tripling, almost quadrupling of the resources to the detriment of other services that we could be doing in the city. That's what our decision is made on.
Pam Cowan is the Chief Marketing and Experience Officer for the YMCA of Greater Rochester. And when you think about serving this community, despite the decision with Carlson, let me ask you two questions, Pam. How can you then continue to serve city residents who have not only gone to Carlson, but depend on the Y for a number of services? And then the other question I have is, and again, I'm not trying to be flip here, but are we now in a situation where we can just assume going forward that the suburban locations will be superior facilities, and what you do in the city will be just about, you know, trying to be as efficient as you can?
So I think I'll answer the latter question first.
Sure.
I don't think that anyone should ever assume that the suburban locations are superior. I think that our Maplewood location is as great as any of them. Does it look exactly the same? It doesn't, because it's in an over 100-year-old building. But that's where my kids take swim lessons. That's where my kids take, you know, sports clinics. There is a community that is attached to that branch and loves that branch in a way that I don't see in many places. And what's beautiful about that is that they see it as the gem of our association. So I wouldn't want anyone to ever think that any of our suburban locations are subpar. That is not anything that we believe. And I guess that's just really where I would go with that. You know, I would encourage you at any time to come to the Center for Equity. Come see what we did there. Come see what we were able to do in a building that now serves 200 kids a week in virtual learning. That is not subpar to anything that we're doing in the suburbs. We have... And I would say, you know, when I look at Thurston, we've done a lot with that location. It's a former CVS building, and it's a great community hub. We're working now to put a senior center in it. So I would say no to your second question. I don't think they're subpar. And what we're looking to do is continue to talk to the community and figure out the services that mean the most to them and find ways through partnership to bring those services to them.
Okay, which buildings, when you compare Maplewood to the suburban ones, take Penfield and Pittsford, which ones have longer hours, operating hours?
So, you know, it's interesting. Right now, all of our branches are operating under reduced hours. And if I look at the hours of all of our branches right now, there are some branches that have longer hours. But if you look at Bayview and Northwest, which are both in the suburbs, they're still closed in the afternoon. Maplewood's not closed in the afternoon. Bayview's still closed on Sunday. Maplewood's not closed on Sunday. Right now, what we're doing is we're looking at what people need. 2 weeks ago, Maplewood's hours were extended. We started opening an hour earlier because we knew there was a need for it. Just this week, Southwest started having longer hours. So right now, what we're doing is we're looking at where is the demand. So everyone's hours, to be honest with you, are very different. They continue to be evaluated, and I think that we will continue to do that as long as we need to. Nobody has the 5:30 to 10 p.m. hours that we used to have, not one branch in our association. But we continue to evaluate and bring those back.
Okay.
Can I add one more thing? I just have to say that to assess what the operating hours are in a COVID environment, if I was a cold-hearted financial person, we would not have any branches open right now because every single one of them lose money. And that is the reality. We cannot be evaluated on what's happening in COVID when we are stuck at 33% and restaurants are at 75%. Why is that? Because the spread of COVID is not happening in YMCAs and fitness organizations. This is a daily discussion with advocates and lobbyists and state people that if, in fact, it is safe, why are we doing that? The faster we get to a sense of normal, the more resources we'll have to envision what we can do in the city. But we are stuck. We were barred from opening for 3 months, even though phase four was clearly when we were going to open. And those situations are out of our control right now. We're trying to stop the red ink so that we can fight another day and not go bankrupt or borrow money so far that we can't even do anything. And that's what we're hopeful will occur in 21 so that 22 looks like a much better picture. There's never been an intent to starve out. In fact, Carlson had some of the longest hours of any branch. The question we have to ask is, why weren't there more people at Carlson if it's such a valuable resource over all this time? And I'm not talking about during COVID.
Well, George, I have to do one more question for George, and then I got to turn the floor over to Chris Widmeyer, who's been waiting patiently, and I appreciate
sure.
that. Mitch Gruber is a member of Rochester City Council, and I don't want to misquote him, but if I recall recently, what he was saying was that, in his view, the YMCA is a nonprofit that operates using profit-based models. And Stephen on Twitter points this out, saying that the councilman says this is about providing services to paying members and no longer about charity and support services for people in poverty. Do you take issue with what, and again, Councilman Gruber, if you're listening, correct me if I'm misquoting you, but I think I'm quoting him accurately, where he says the YMCA is operating using a profit-based model, but it's a nonprofit. Is that fair or unfair?
I would categorize it as a social enterprise. I would categorize it that we benefit greatly from services that do generate dollars to help reinvest in other areas. No question about it, but we earn our not-for-profit status every day. And because in any location, including the largest of the suburban branches, no one is turned away. And that is a key part of our heritage and what we will continue to do. Do I wish that we had more specific directed resources to the city? Absolutely. But where is that? I mean, where is that? We raised $7 million for Maplewood in the middle of the recession to build that YMCA. That was one of the toughest projects I've ever had to take on. And, you know, the feeling that we're not investing, even in the 10-year period of Carlson, we invested over $3.5 million in that branch. And people say, well, you should. Well, where is that money coming from? If it's not coming from philanthropy and it's not coming from government, it has to come from operations. So I don't think we should be vilified for having success in order to reinvest. If we kept that money there and didn't reinvest it, as we clearly have demonstrated, then I think we should clearly be vilified.
Chris Widmeyer is a former member of the YMCA of Greater Rochester for about 25 years. Chris, how do you assess this? Because I know you've said you're open to going back to Y membership.
Yeah, no, canceling my membership was a really tough decision for me. I had kept my membership through the pandemic, as a commitment to the mission and the community of the Y. And then when they closed the Monroe branch and you know, that was a tipping point for me in the conversation we had. And even when I called to try to, you know, have a conversation or emailed and didn't get anything back. You know, it was something that was a hard thing for me to do. But I think what I'm hearing today and what I want to bring into the conversation is there's a lot of discussion that needs to happen about the Y's role in the community. As I hear both the Y representatives talking about how, you know, who the Y serves and what the role of the Y is in the city, that narrative doesn't include me, a middle class, middle-aged white guy that absolutely loves the community that I find at the Y. And I want myself to be part of that story. I want all of the young professionals that are moving downtown who haven't also their role in what they could do to revitalize the Y hasn't been discussed yet. I think also there's, one of the things that I think that the city-wise do that, was kind of touched on is they are places where there is a lot of and happening. You know, there are people who are young and old, you know, working out side by side and playing basketball together. And I think that's a really key piece of what the Y does in the city is that it brings people together across all of these different boundaries. That I quite frankly haven't experienced when I go out to the city or to the suburban Y's. And so, you know, I think that's something that I understand, and I'm trying to be very, you know, conscious of the financial realities that the YMCA is facing right now. But, you know, there are other things that I look at, and I really want the whole story to be told. And I really appreciate the transparency today as well. And you know, more transparency than our community saw when the Y shut down the Monroe Y, just all of a sudden one day shuttered it without really much explanation. You know, and I looked at the annual report that's on the YMCA's website, and it said up till October, they actually operated at a surplus, you know, and then when I look at the financial information and please add more information and to my understanding here, if there's something more I need to understand, but taking on $20 million in debt that looked like it was for the Shotland Y in the financial reports between, I've got to find my dates here exactly, but, you know, those are things, 2017, 2018, you know, those are things that also need to be part of the conversation. And just this whole narrative of, you know, the city wise or drain on the suburban wise and the resources, you know, and that kind of discounting the human capital that the suburban wise are getting from the city or just the different perspective. Is that included in the strategy and the, you know, that's being made? But I think also there's some conversation that we can have around, you know, funding and philanthropy. I think that was really interesting to hear that the United Way stopped funding things in a way that the Y could support its whole mission of bringing the whole community, you know, adults and children together in the city. That was an interesting thing to hear. And that, you know, the municipal and philanthropic world isn't able to support the city-wise in the ways that they could. You know, reading about all the millions of dollars that were donated to the Shotland Y, you know, I was trying to figure out in my head, you know, why weren't those people that are so committed to our community, you know, engaged in this conversation about what should happen downtown and why this conversation, you know, wasn't a bigger thing before the pandemic for our whole community, that if the membership at the Carlson Y was declining so rapidly and so consistently, and what sort of measures were used of the need, because that's another thing that, like, literally 5-minute walk, I started a swim team at World of Inquiry. There's no pool at that school, and we had 25 students on the team before I left. So that kind of, like, there is a demand for people to learn how to swim and have opportunities to swim near the Carlson Y. So, you know, those are all things that I think we need to continue to have conversations about.
Chris, are you asking, let me make sure I understand. So are you saying when you look at the Y saying, look what happened at Carlson, big change from the 1990s to now. And we're talking, by the way, let me just clarify again for listeners who are just joining us. George Rommel, Pam Cowan from the Y are making the point that this is not just a pandemic issue. This is an issue that precedes the pandemic, that was preceded by years of a decline in usage and became something that looked like it sort of, in their view, forced their hand, pandemic or not. So, Chris, are you saying if you see those trends at Carlson, what are you doing to ward off those trends? What are you doing to make sure more people are going to Carlson? Is that part of what you wanted to see or get clarified?
Yeah, I think so. And I think that, you know, when we talk about the role of the city government and, you know, and the redevelopment of downtown, like, it just seems like those should have been conversations that have been happening for the last 10 years. You know, as same thing being at World of Inquiry and having a window where I watched downtown develop over the last 10 years, just from my classroom window, you know, where was the conversation? And I would love to hear an answer to this, you know, between the mayor's office and the downtown developers, the, you know, that have so much to gain from what's going on downtown and our philanthropic world. I mean, there are a lot of people that have benefited greatly from what's going on in the city of Rochester, whether they live here, you know, whether they live within the city limits or not. And so, you know, having a conversation about what their role is in our community and in both providing a whole rich, full community, but then also meeting those needs of young people and families that don't have means, but that also have a lot to contribute. And that part, too, of you know, how do we talk about it that way, that there's a lot that people can contribute. There's a lot of abundance in resources that may not be financial.
Yeah.
What is it that we can do to bring them into the conversation?
So, George Rommel, if you saw those trends happening for years at Carlson, what did you do to make sure people or what did you do to try to get more people going back to Carlson?
All right. Well, that's a lot to unpack. Thank you, Chris. I mean, I really do appreciate your point of view and the fact that you've been a loyal Y member for such a long time. I think number one, remember that in this past decade that we just ended, the monies raised at Shotland were part of a $75 million comprehensive campaign, of which over $10 million of endowment fund requests specifically directed towards the city we were successful in. Now, you don't get those bequests until those individuals pass away. But what we wanted to ensure was the future of the city to have additional sources of money to support things. I completely support the decision by the United Way to change funding streams because it was about outcomes. It was about kids and school and all of those things, and they have absolutely done the right thing. In terms of why less people went to Carlson, let's try to do that. Was it our product? Was it our staff? Was it our cleanliness? What was it? Because essentially the Carlson membership is the same price structure as the suburban branches, which allows access. I will certainly admit that some of our Carlson members who were commuters coming into downtown were probably driving by new YMCAs and started to look at alternatives. But you cannot ignore the fact that three major corporations disappeared. I think Chris mentioned basketball. I used to watch 30 to 40 people play basketball at noon at Carlson. There is nobody that was playing basketball at noon at Carlson anymore because the lunchtime workout had disappeared. It was a different model. And here's what I'm hoping. With the right partners and the right community engagement and the really great task force, including Mitch Gruber, who's on that task force, can we create a vision so that things like World of Inquiry, which was at Carlson, can continue and grow? Swim teams that no longer have to battle for pool space when 18 hours a day is taken up by that. Now, that is a lofty dream. I hope that we can achieve it. We will not be able to do it alone. But if you take the idea out that the membership is the most important thing and say it's the service to community that's the most important thing, why can't we envision us doing things differently? And it seems like the membership is the flashpoint for that. I would really encourage you to look at, you know, participating at Maplewood. I think you'll find what you have. I don't see any retreat by the Y of trying to put as many resources as possible and talent into the city that we possibly can. It is our responsibility. I've spent my whole career here trying to do that and find a way to thread that needle. And I'm very fortunate to see other cities and what they do and how they do it in this kind of living laboratory that we have. There is no desire to go backwards in impact, but volume matters.
George,
volume
is that happening? Matters. Is that happening in other cities, by the way, where the Y is closing closing city branches and opening big branches in the suburbs?
It is a complete nationwide, probably continent-wide challenge. I look at four cities, including us, that built a Y just like Metro Center in Dallas, St. Paul, and Birmingham. Same situation. Columbus, Ohio, same situation. Calgary, Canada, Albany, New York, all of these situations in having to deal with the fact that resources have been sliced. We were a $62 million organization prior to March 16th. We end the fiscal year yesterday. We will not get to $28 million. So how could we even envision what was happening? A very aggressive strategic plan about urban growth and suburban balancing and philanthropy turned into one word, survival. And we have been able to do it. And Chris, you mentioned very adroitly that we were operating because so many members in the initial months of the pandemic continued to support us. And then as the opening got delayed and delayed and delayed, we lost 60% of our membership. And so will we get them back? Will people's habits change? Because if the dream is to have that Carlson White be a more of a neighborhood hub, I got to have partners. If there is an opportunity to create a new facility in the city, I got to have partners, I got to have philanthropy, and I got to have government. There's no way to do this otherwise. And the reason why, you know, the suburban branches are so successful, it's the numbers. Charlotte has 33,000 members. Eastside has 25,000 members. We have never seen that ever in the city of Rochester. And the boom of downtown living did not materialize very little for us because a lot of those developments have their own centers.
Okay, let me just ask Chris if you want. Let me just ask Chris then, what would it take to get your membership again, Chris?
That's a good question. I mean, the Maplewood Y, that is my home Y. It has been since I was probably, 6 years old, is since I was old enough for my mom to drop me off there. And it always will be. And I think the thing that I really need to see is a real commitment and awareness of how the YMCA, the role it can play in building our whole community. One of the things that's really hard is this city-suburbs conversation that we always have here in Rochester. And it's really interesting because people see them as separate when in one situation and see them as connected in other situations. And so, you know, the fate of the suburbs is the fate of the city. And when we talk about resources that are available, if we think of our whole community, there are plenty of resources available to support vibrant YMCAs in the city. And so I think, you know, we talk about the city, nationwide impact and how this is happening. I think Milwaukee's kind of a case study where, you know, I know that they've also closed some of their city-wise and their suburban-wise and did some things to restructure. But then on the other hand, there's an organization, the Urban Ecology Center, which has grown. They have three locations and an annual budget of $7 million and 70 employees, all within the city. And their funds come from lots of different sources, revenue and donors, but they've kind of flipped the mentality of the way things work and the way that they're operating in a way that's working and is sustainable. And it's not about there's draws coming from other places to keep other things alive, that they're relying on the abundance of the community to keep everything alive. And so that's the kind of mentality and way that we need to work together. We need to bring the community together. And you know, a task force is one thing, but, you know, until there's a broad awareness of what the community really wants. And when I say the community, I mean our city, our suburbs, and the strategic plan that's showing how the YMCA is going to meet the needs. You know, the other thing that you brought up is Mayor Johnson's, you know, the idea of intent versus impact. And there needs to be a real, acknowledgement. And I think there's some today, but there really needs to be a real acknowledgement of the impact of, you know, pools are really important to me. The impact of closing two city pools within a year and what that means for access that children in the city have to learn how to swim. And that is significant. The city just did a survey about children's outdoor bill of rights, and the right to learn how to swim came up as one of the top two things that most, you know, children and families that were answering the survey. And so, you know, that there's, I need more when it comes to acknowledging the impact of those kinds of things. And I need a strategy that's going to address all of that.
I'm going to jump on the phones, but Pam Cowan, about a minute, if you want to talk about swimming, go ahead. Do you want to respond to what Chris just said?
I would. You know, I mean, I think there's a couple things to talk about. One, the Maplewood pool still has capacity. So certainly, you know, there is plenty of time and space for children. The other thing that I think that George was clear about is that we are not done thinking about what Carlson can be. That pool is there. There may be new opportunities. And I think what it comes down to is that the why is not just membership. Membership is a part and a piece of the why. We have so many other services, and that's what we're trying to take a moment to pause and think about. We need to figure out what is the best use of that space. And maybe to Chris's point, it gets more kids in the pool. We don't know the answer. And what we can't do is try to tell you that answer right now. It would not be fair to go out with a set of expectations that we know right now we can't promise. In the world of COVID and without asking the task force and the community to do their homework with us. So that's what we're asking right. for. We're right. asking for a little bit of time to be able to formulate that strategic plan so that we can come back and report that to you.
All right, let me get some more
Evan, can I just
Gotta be tight, George. Yep, go ahead.
I'm very happy to announce that Special Olympics will be using the Carlson Pool on Sundays. There's a perfect example of us reaching out to the community and not having to battle with members on a Sunday.
Okay, let me get to the phones. And one of the vocal critics has been a longtime member and a county legislator, Rachel Barnhart, who called in. Go ahead, Rachel.
Oh, hi, Evan. Hi, George, Pam, and Chris. Chris and I grew up together swimming on the Maplewood Y swim team. I have been a member of the YMCA. I kept my membership during the pandemic precisely because I saw this coming. I was hoping that my membership dollars would prevent what I did see as inevitable, particularly when the Carlson branch was not opened, when the other YMCAs were opening after the closure period. There was a delay. And, you know, I think there's a lot going on here, and I think Mayor Johnson had it exactly right. The impact here is one that says the city is not as important. The city gets inferior facilities. And look, I grew up at Maplewood, and I'm thrilled Maplewood Y was saved. But it is not the same. And it's a great facility, but the hours are simply not the same. They're not. It's a lesser facility, and it's treated that way. And the impact of all of this, frankly, is a legacy of racism in this community. This is a racist decision. It cannot be sold as any other thing. The entire framing of this conversation and past conversations has been that the city Ys are a burden and the suburban Ys fund the city Ys. That entire framework is problematic for a nonprofit system. We should not be thinking of city Ys as a burden and city people as a burden. It should come as no surprise when you invest millions of dollars in suburban facilities that is where people are going to go and spend their dollars. It should not come as a surprise that people in the city who don't have as much access to transportation or membership dollars would not be going to those facilities.
But George says they weren't going to Carlson.
Well, but what did George do to get people to go to Carlson? You know, I was going to Carlson for a long time. I did not see marketing campaigns, nor did I see any announcement to the community that this branch was in danger. Where was
let's dial for dollars.
Let's try to raise money. Let's try to get government grants. I saw no plan. There was no vision or strategy. It was let them fail. You cannot open the Taj Mahal of Ys in Pittsford and then close two urban Ys right after and say that that is somehow just, or that you didn't have make conscious decisions that allowed that to happen.
All right,
and I appreciate the task force. I really hope that it is a success and that we do find something to do with that facility. Thank you.
All right, go ahead, George.
Rachel, you yourself, when we reopened, clearly sounded the warning bell to your constituency about how challenged it was with Carlson being so empty. There was no physical possible way for us to reopen all of our branches after having to furlough 1,500 staff. And remember, Maplewood and Southwest were in the first run of YMCAs that opened. There was no discrimination of the city because you know that Southwest and Maplewood and Lewis Street are the most diverse branches we have. And that is a simple demographic fact and serves communities that would never be served by any other organization if it wasn't for the ability for us to produce the dollars. That is not an entitlement situation. That is our responsibility that we take seriously. And while I appreciate your membership at Maplewood, we are supporting Maplewood $1 million a year for you and others to be there. So to take umbrage with the fact that we're not doing it at Carlson, you tell me how I can support 65,000 square feet of 500 people coming where Maplewood at half the square footage has 300 people a day, which is 20% higher based on the square footage. And that is the reality. If we were announcing that we were completely abandoning the city, that would be a whole different story. This is a membership operation that has not kept up with the changes in the city of Rochester, and we have marketed that branch. We ran a urban constituency campaign. We ran every campaign that we run is a fully association-wide campaign. We have gained members, we have lost members. And if this were not COVID times, it would be a completely different discussion about the future. I have been in negotiations with four different entities around other city facilities over the last 10 years. Let's have a real conversation about how partners in government could come together if this is an important initiative, because we have been doing it alone. And to ask us to be doing it alone is not possible given what we've had to face in the last year.
I will say
notwithstanding,
that, yeah, I will say, George, as we hit the end here, you know, you asked the community to hold you accountable to continue to serve the city in different and creative ways. And I know that you and Pam and the team are working on that. And we'll do that, and we'll continue these conversations. Because I know there will be questions about what happens with that building at Carlson, and a lot more going forward. I appreciate the time, George. Thanks for making it for the program.
Thank you very much.
Pam Cowan, same. Thanks for being on the program today.
You bet. Thanks.
Chris Widmire, former member of the YMCA, who has got some decisions to make. Thank you, Chris. Thanks for sharing your perspective.
Thank you, Evan. And I hope the Y doesn't feel like they have to do this alone. The community's ready, and that's what we want to do. We want to be part of this to make the Y successful in the city.
All right. Megan Mack, producer, Rob Braden, engineer. I'm Evan Dawson. We'll talk to you tomorrow.